just didn't know.
As soon as Agriculture and Veterans Budget Policy Committee will come to order, we're going to start right in on the Budget Overview, Department of Military Affairs, and I'm going to ask Major General Larry Sholto if he would come up. We're changing things around here just a little bit to get more members here, then we'll go into the rest of this. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Larry Sholto. I'm the Adjutant General for the State of Minnesota, the Department of Military Affairs. And with me today, to my right, is Colonel Alness, Eric Alness, who is my lead person in dealing with legislative matters on both the federal and state level. And to my left is Mr. Terry Palmer, who is my state employee, my budget analyst, my state expert, and keeps me in line so I do not get in trouble with this committee. So I'll just go with that. Our portion of the briefing, I'll give you a general overview. Some of it to the more senior members on this committee, I apologize. It'll be kind of a review. It's an overview of the Guard. Colonel Alness will go specifically with the legislative proposals, and Mr. Palmer will deal into the specifics of the budget. Should have before you a handout that looks something like this. And just to facilitate the ease in following along. Also in your packet, hopefully you have our annual report. One of the requirements of my position is to file an annual report, actions and proceedings that occur in the Department of Military Affairs. And I'm proud to say that our 150th anniversary of the Minnesota National Guard, going back to 1856 in the Pioneer Guard, all the way through, we have been as active, if not more active, than we've ever been in our history. And you're very much aware of it because you're living through it also. So it's an excellent piece, and it talks about the things that we are doing. And more specifically in the back, it talks about the communities that we are involved in, as far as a training center, armory, if you will, and the economic impact that we have in that community. The first slide I want you to look at is in the bottom of that first page. It talks about the oath of office. One of the most common questions I get when I go on the speaking circuit is, what is the difference between the reserve and the guard? And I think it's important for this committee to differentiate between the two because of some decisions that you'll be asked to make in the future. The active army, the reserve, or the active component, the reserve, and the National Guard, all people swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution of the United States. We can be called to be under the command and control of the President of the United States. Currently, we have over 3,000 Minnesotans under the command and control of the President of the United States in Afghanistan and Iraq. However, what's unique only, that's a key word, only to the National Guard, is they swear also an oath of allegiance to the Minnesota Constitution. And their commander-in-chief is the governor of the state of Minnesota. There is only one military component that this state can call upon in a state emergency immediately, and that is the National Guard. So that is why the National Guard oftentimes will say that we expect more from the state to take care of us because we don't have Big Brother as our major parent. You are our parents, if you will, if you want to use an analogy. This oath of office is the major significant difference between the Guard and the Reserve. If you look at the next page, you'll see, and I'll go through these rather quickly. Right now in the state of Minnesota, we have 13,157 men and women in the Army and Air National Guard. Your Army Guard consists of the 34th Infantry Division, of which a subset is the 1st Brigade Combat Team. And you keep hearing about the Red Bulls in Iraq. That's the 1st Brigade Combat Team. They have approximately 2,600 of our Minnesotans attached to that unit, and they are performing extremely well. We have a troop command, which is the command and control element for non-divisional units. We have an artillery unit in southern Minnesota, southwest Minnesota, the 151, who were over in artillery or over in Iraq a couple of years ago. They're part of the troop command. We have an engineer unit that's part of the troop command. So they have adult supervision, if you will. Of interest is the regional support command, and they're involved in the education and the training, and as we look at it, they will be more actively involved in the future, because you're going to hear, and this becomes a significant piece of information for this committee. The Secretary of Defense has agreed to, on the national level, to limit the deployments of National Guard and reservists, if you will, to no more than 12 months. Now, I want to put into context what that means. The 1st Brigade Combat Team has been deployed for close to 18 months right now as we speak. When they were given the notice to deploy, the first 6 months were spent in Camp Shelby, Mississippi, doing training for the tasks that they will actually do in Iraq. They were doing convoy live fire. They were doing raids. They were doing practicing on how to bust down a door if necessary. So that has now been taken away. What will happen and what's being discussed is we will bring them, and it's going to be more of a come-as-you-are type of deployment. They will, the current plan is probably a 2 and 10. They will say to the state of Minnesota, you have 2 months to get them ready. Most of that time will be taking, making sure that their dental records are straight, they're physically fit, and the basic marksmanship and so forth. The additional time training them on the tasks that they will be tasked to do, and then they'll be in country. The person who will now sign off to determine that they are combat ready will be myself and my staff, as we will be the ones responsible to train them. So if we come back saying this is a more serious and demanding issue for the state of Minnesota, I hope you understand. So totally about a little over 10,000, close to 10,500, wear the Army green, if you will. We also have two air wings in the state of Minnesota, the 133rd that's located at the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. They fly the C-130 cargo plane. They have the latest model, the H-3 model, and they are currently in Afghanistan flying supply runs. They have spent a lot of time training and, in essence, to do precision drops to drop supplies via parachute out of the plane to land on the top of a hill or a mountain, if you will. And they're doing it, and they're doing it well. We also have the 148th Fighter Wing. And this past Sunday, with the governor, Senator Coleman, and Senator Klobuchar, we were in Duluth, Minnesota, and we said and had a deployment ceremony for 400 of that wing that are now being sent over, and some are already there in Balad Air Base in Iraq. They will be flying combat missions, so if you see any news footage of jets flying over, that's probably going to be a Minnesotan. If you see footage of troops going through the streets and so forth, that's probably going to be Minnesotans. And then we have a Joint Force Headquarters, which is located in the Veterans Service Building. And this is a combination of Army and Air to make sure we synchronize our resources and assets to make things happen. The lower slide is another more specific slide on the Army Guard. The next page shows both the airlift and the 148th. Of note is since 9/11, you know, we have 13,000. We have issued over 12,200 deployment orders for Minnesota soldiers and airmen. They have been in over 33 different countries, the 133rd in 28, the 48th in 12, and then the Army in about 6 or 7 right now. They started with Bosnia, then they went to Kosovo, then they went to Afghanistan, then they went to Iraq, and right now they're on the border in New Mexico also. So we have been very, very actively deployed. If you go to the page that shows the communities impacted, the current deployment of the 2,600 just out of the 1st Brigade Combat Teams identifies 585 different communities that have been directly impacted by the deployment. Last Monday, I spoke to the Minnesota Association of Farm Mutual Insurance Agents. Over 500 were in the luncheon at the Sheraton in Bloomington. When I asked them to stand if they knew of someone who was that they knew personally and felt fairly close to, if they would stand if they were in Iraq or Afghanistan, and well over 90% of that audience stood. So this deployment is affecting the entire state of Minnesota. Of that 585 communities, 85 of the 87 counties are impacted. How do we take care of them? That's the number one concern that I have, because that's my mission. When the troops deployed, they said they were well-trained, they were well-equipped. I've been over to Afghanistan twice. I've been over to Iraq twice. And within the next 3 months, I hope to be back to both of them again for the third time each. They are very comfortable with what they are doing. They have faith in equipment, their leadership, and you can be proud of Minnesota. But they will look me in the eye and say, the number one thing that you can do for me, really the only thing I expect you to do for me, is take care of my families. We have 11 family assistance centers strategically located across the state of Minnesota. They tend to be at the what we call the battalion or higher headquarters communities. We spend close to $1 million a year.
I want to interrupt you for a minute.
Sure.
Is 11 enough, or do we need to find funds to have more than that?
I'll continue. I think we're all right for now.
Okay.
Because what we do, each one of those communities has the center, which is the full-time staff. And like I say, we have a budget that is close to the $1 million mark every year that we make sure those are taken care of. However, each of the units, for example, Moorhead has units in Bemidji, Crookston, Thief River Falls, Fergus Falls, et cetera, Alexandria. So they have what they call family readiness groups. That tends to be volunteers, members of the families troops that are deployed. They create their own calling trees. They create their own fundraising. They bring them in. They talk about it, and they help each other out. So it's spouses helping spouses or family helping families. For example, the night the president gave the communication that he was going to extend the troops in Iraq, knew something was up because New York Times and CNN and the AP already leaked it, verbatim, if you will. So we were ready. I got a call from the National Guard Bureau. Yes, it is true. It is going to happen. He may or may not say something in his speech, but you have to wait until 9 o'clock, your time, to release the information. He went. It wasn't specific, but the news media was reporting it. At 9:01, I pushed an email that went out. It went to all of the family assistance centers and all of the family readiness group leaders, and they in turn got it and they pushed it out. And so you can see that little spider web effect take place as to how we communicate. The email is the number one source of communication. There was a lot of angst going on about the soldiers not hearing about it. They didn't get official word, just for your information, until about 5 days later. But the families got it, and so we have a very good network, and they're being taken care of. The citizens of Minnesota have stepped forward through our Military Family Foundation and the Minnesota Military Assistance Fund. And in our foundation, we've had enough money raised so that we're able to right now, and also through the decisions made by the legislature last year for the license plates assistance, we've been averaging about $25,000 a month for the last 2-3 months to assist these families. Everything from a tank of propane gas to repairing a washing machine and dryer, to just helping them, because most of these people that are left back home are young with children. And while we have, so we're taking care of them as best we can that way. And then the last slide that I'll talk about, I just want to show not only with our annual report the things that we have been doing, but also we're very, very proud of, because we consider the National Guard to be the premier steward of environmental issues in the state of Minnesota. And why do we say that? Because, you know, talk is cheap. Do you have any evidence? And the evidence is the Minnesota National Guard and Camp Ripley in particular was cited. Minnesota was cited as the state of the year, and Camp Ripley was awarded the highest award the Department of Defense issues for Environmental Act Conservancy in the world. It's not just their U.S. facilities, it's all their facilities worldwide. And I encourage all of you, and I invite all of you to come to Camp Ripley, where we will show you the large number of beautiful deer, turkeys, wolves, bears, you name it. So we're very, very proud of that. But we're here for specific reasons, and that is the legislative package that will be before you this session. So I'd like to turn it over now to Colonel Eric Allness to talk about our initiatives.
Thank you, sir. Chairman Vickerman, members. The governor has approved four legislative initiatives for the Department of Military Affairs to be considered by the legislature this session. The first initiative amends Statute 192.501 in two ways, and that's our incentive refinement packet. First, it allows service members who desire to advance their careers in the Guard to continue to receive a bonus should they elect to become an officer. And currently, soldiers or service members are provided a bonus up their 12th year of service. If during that time they should elect to become an officer, they would lose a portion of that bonus. And what we want to do is this change would remove that disincentive to continue their career and continue their leadership development. This also provides the Adjutant General greater strategic control to develop the force and help keep the force vital and healthy for Minnesota. Second, we want to offer up to 25 $1,000 scholarships annually to high school seniors who are interested in joining or have recently joined the National Guard. This tool allows us to highlight exceptional young leaders and target them for success in their academic endeavors and within the National Guard. And just to add on, if they're interested in joining the Guard, they actually have to join the Guard to receive that scholarship. This is a revenue-neutral initiative. The second initiative is dealing with the Recreation Fund at Camp Ripley. This provides us an instrument to manage donations, receipt of non-appropriated funds, federal non-appropriated funds, and a portion of the revenue from recycling programs for the healthy benefit of the soldiers and airmen who train at our training sites. It's in our best interest for us to provide safe and healthy opportunities for our service members to promote well-being and provide off-duty recreational activities. Examples of this program include biking, boating, team sports equipment, and movies. Our third initiative remedies a gap we discovered in the Support Our Troops legislation that was passed recently. We found that some service members, particularly if they are injured while serving overseas, when they returned to Minnesota, they weren't in active drilling status, or maybe they weren't fully enrolled in the VA program yet, and they had physical disabilities or issues that they needed help with. According to the statute, since they weren't in one of those categories, they weren't eligible for grants from the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. This proposal would bridge that gap and make sure that we can provide these resources to those needed service members and their families. And our final initiative changes the classification of the firefighters serving at Duluth. The current statute does not consider state employees serving in the capacity of firefighters as essential employees. Firefighters are considered essential employees at municipal and county levels. And these firefighters serve a critical role as the crash and rescue team for the 148th Fighter Wing and also for the Duluth International Airport. As such, flight operations would have to be suspended if they were not available to work at the airport until replacements could be found. As I said, firefighters are essential employees in other parts of the statute, and we believe these are the only firefighters who work as state employees, so I'm not sure how that happened, but this remedies what we think is a gap and provides that critical capability. The fifth initiative I want to talk about just briefly, and that's a separate page at the very end of your packet, talks about the military and veterans tax exemption. And this is one of the two marquee items from the governor's agenda for military and veterans issue. This initiative proposed 100% subtraction of military and retiree pay from income taxes. Although characterized as a benefit honoring service of those individuals, more importantly are some of the other features of this initiative as it relates specifically for us for the recruiting and retention of our service members. And from the veterans' perspective, the workforce development aspects of the bill are of higher practical use. Further, it levels or improves Minnesota's treatments of these groups as it relates to our neighboring states. This concludes our legislative initiatives, And for any question, I'll be followed by Mr. Palmer, who will provide you a budget overview.
Any questions? Senator Erickson Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today and presenting us with the overview. I have a question about the Duluth firefighters. Are they requesting to be designated as essential employees, or where does that initiative come from? And what do the firefighters in Duluth have to say about that?
You know, I think we've received a couple answers from it, but excuse me, Chairman Vickerman and Senator Erickson Robes. I think the firefighters would like to have resolution on this issue more than anything else, because it puts them in a very difficult situation. When there was a state strike, some of them were ordered to duty to backfill so that this essential service could be taken on. So then we had cases of people who were crossing the line and performing a service because it was a needed service. So I think largely the firefighters would like to just see resolution to the issue.
One way or another?
Well, you know, the problem is if they're not declared essential employees and there is a state strike, at that point it's very likely that the governor would order them to state active duty to respond to it. So then they would have the same problem.
Chair Vickerman, Senator, I think the higher order decision has to be made is the sustainment of the international airport facility and so forth. Of such a nature that it becomes an essential service to that community and so forth. Are there workarounds? Yes. Is workarounds an appropriate strategy? I don't think so. But, you know, if you say, no, we don't want to do it, we'll have the workarounds. But I think the higher order is what is the right thing to do for the state of Minnesota?
Major General Hiloto, we're kind of hinging in on my idea of taking care of those Air Guard or National Guards that are coming back, hopefully in August. They were going to be back in March, and that didn't happen. But and I believe the figure that I'm looking at is around 3,000. Is that Guards? Is that Reserves? Or is that a whole mixture?
Senator Vickerman, Mr. Chair, that's the Minnesota National Guard. What the Minnesota National Guard, under the direction of the governor and so forth, is and through your work and serve our troops or support our troops, we have opened that to all components. For example, on Tuesday night I spoke to the Blue Star Mothers. There's mothers with active duty servicemen, airmen, Marines, Navy, Guard, Army Reserve, Air Reserve, so forth. So we are committed to providing a reception for all soldiers, airmen, military, regardless component, branch, and so forth, to make this thing happen. But what I told the family, the parents, was it's easier for us in the Guard because, one, we have large units deployed, and we have command and control over them so we can set and get it going. However, every one of our events is posted on our website, and it's an open invitation. And if they have a – when you deal with, like, the Army Reserve, they have a tendency to call what they call IMAs, individual augmentees, military augmentees. And those are onesies and twosies that go out quietly, come back quietly, and who can they go see? So our long-range vision, and we're working on the federal level as well as the state – is to create a reintegration center in the long term so that anyone coming back home has a one-stop shop that they can go that transcends the federal benefits and services and integrates and pluses into it the state contributions also. So it's going to be a very veterans-friendly opportunity. But this is the growth that we're going through. Mr. Palmer could go through our budget. I think we'll start identifying some of those things, and then we can clarify all of these and how they intertwine, because there's a tail, i.e. a cost, to some of these activities.
Mr. Chair, committee members, staff, my name is Terry Palmer. I'm the comptroller for the Department of Military Affairs. As you can see from the final slide in the packet, Military Affairs has a budget request of just over $41 million, as recommended by the governor. We have three programs that are aligned with our appropriations, and we have a separate program that's based on an open appropriation. And I will brief in the same order that our items appear in the budget book, if you have those available. The first program we have is the maintenance of training facilities. And within that, there's a change item dealing with special assessments. In Minnesota, part of the process for constructing armories is that the local community donate property for that purpose. And the problem we're facing now is that we own that property, but the communities are assessing it for road improvements or all those other utility services that are assessed against any property, but we're unable to make those payments, and we're required by statute to include that request in our budget, and that's what we're doing here. The governor's recommending a $185,000 one-time appropriation to pay those special assessments around the state. The next item in the maintenance of training facilities is an activity called Camp Ripley and Holman Field. It generally deals with Camp Ripley and the logistical facilities around the state. We've got just over 54,000 acres in Camp Ripley and Arden Hills, 2.1 million square feet of facilities, and over 1,384 buildings. And what this activity does is it helps to pay the state share of those operating costs where we're required to provide a federal match, and in some instances the state's required to pay for the operating costs of facilities at Camp Ripley. The next item in that program is the armory maintenance activity. And within there, that is the program that pays for the operational costs of the armories. When we partner with the federal government to construct these buildings, we're required to pay for the operational costs to maintain those buildings and to pay for the utilities and all those things that go into that. And this is the funding for those activities. As you know, armories also serve as emergency centers for persons during weather extremes and other natural disasters. So they get a lot of use not only by the military units that are assigned there, but by the civilian community too. And deployments of soldiers from the Minnesota National Guard has also placed a greater burden on these facilities and the personnel trying to take care of them. And that leads into the next item in our budget, which is a change item dealing with the armory maintenance program. The governor is recommending a $3.5 million change item dealing with the maintenance of training facilities. What we hope to do with that is to, through a combination of hiring and contracting, to do those things that we need to do as a state in those state-owned facilities, which is to take care of them on a day-to-day basis, to do the minor repairs, mow the lawn, clear the snow away so they're accessible. Also, to make sure we have people capable of handling all the activities surrounding the operation of the boilers in those buildings, which is one of the issues that came up, as you know. Several years ago, we had to lay off our custodial staff to help balance the state budget. And in doing so, some things have shown up that we hadn't anticipated, one of which is the necessity for licensed boiler operators in our facilities. So currently, this work is being done by federal employees and by soldiers on a part-time basis. And in many instances, they're not there anymore because they're deployed. And what this does is it turns the responsibility back over to the state and frees up those soldiers and employees to do the work that they're supposed to be doing, which is preparing the soldiers for the activities on the federal and state side. This is a very important one for the department. And then the next two activities within that program are have to do with the two air bases, one in Twin Cities and one in Duluth. The agreements with the federal government include the requirement of the state to match funds in the civil engineering area for both of the bases. In the case of Minneapolis, we're required to provide a 25% match, and that amounts to just over $1.3 million for the biennium. In the case of Duluth, we're required to provide a 20% match, and that amounts to just over $1,600,000 over the biennium. And that is just the general operating costs. That's utilities, that's the maintenance and repair facilities. Then the next program you see in the budget book and on the slide is the general support program. Within there, there's several programs, activities. One is the administrative services, and then there's a couple of other ones that are minor importance, but nonetheless important for the agency. And this, Senator Bickerman, gets to part of the question you were asking, which is about the reintegration process. And the governor's recommending a $1.5 million appropriation that's available till expended for this purpose. And what we hope to do is to utilize these along with any federal funding we might be able to acquire to provide those services to the soldiers and their families. And the General Shalito has made it very clear that he wants the agency to take care of these soldiers when they return from duty. Part of that program is to look them in the eye at 30, 60, and 90 days, make sure they're doing okay and that their families and their financial matters are all in order. And that's what this program is intended to do, provide funding for those services, including counseling and conferences to help them deal with the stress of separation on their marriage and financial issues, too. So very important part of our budget request. Then the general support program itself is really the activity for the agency. It's the staff at the Adjutant General's office. It's the rent for the Veterans Service Building and just the general things that are required to run the operation. There's also a budget requesting a change of adding three employees to the department's complement. The governor's recommending a $560,000 appropriation in that budget. And what that'll do is two things. One, well, we hope to hire two planners on the state side that'll help the agency become better prepared to respond to any disasters that might occur. Currently, the National Guard is asked to wait until that open appropriation is available through the governor's declaration of an emergency to prepare for some of these disasters. And that works okay if we're dealing with those things that we're comfortable with and on small scales. But as we've seen over the last several years, there's a lot larger activities occurring that we really need some time to prepare for and do some planning, including the Republican National Convention and the avian flu epidemic that we're currently preparing, all state agencies are preparing for. But the National Guard has a slightly different role, and we need someone there that can make those links and make those associations with other agencies so we don't have to try to bring people up to speed quickly within a couple of days to get them ready for those missions. They'll be there, and they'll know their contacts with any other agencies and be able to do a much better job. The other issue that we've noticed due to all the deployments, we had a quartermaster on staff that really took care of the state property. It was done on a part-time basis, about 20% employee, and that's just not sufficient anymore. All of the property that's in the armories, for the most part, that stays back when the units deploy is state property. The federal government takes the soldiers and their personal equipment and those organizational pieces of equipment with them. But what remains is the custodial equipment, the lawnmowers, the snow plows, all those other things. And what's happening is we really should be sending someone out to those locations and turning over the accountability from the departing people to the people that are remaining behind, and doing a similar activity when those companies return back from duty. We just don't have the manpower to do that, and consequently we're not doing a very good job of accounting for state property. The other issue that comes up is as the federal government invests more money into the National Guard through those cooperative agreements, any of that property that's purchased with federal money through a cooperative agreement becomes state property. So at the armories, you'll see a lot of high-tech communications equipment or VTC equipment, and because those items are generally purchased through a cooperative agreement, they are state property, and we're required to track that. And we're just at a point where we're getting overwhelmed trying to do that with a part-time employee. We're not able to do that anymore. I already covered the administrative services piece, and the other budget activity within there is just a pass-through. It's an accounting structure for handling of funds. And then the final program, or the final activity in that program, is the STAR-based Minnesota program. That is a 100% federally funded program at the Minneapolis Air Base that is an educational program primarily for inner-city youth. And the intent is to get them interested in science and math through use of aerospace technologies. And it's been an extremely successful program and really doesn't cost the state anything, but it does appear in our budget request. And then the final program in our budget request is the Enlistment Incentives Program. We're not proposing any changes to that program and funding. It's a very important program. We think it has a lot to do with the success the Minnesota National Guard has over the last several years of being number one in the country in recruiting, along with the willingness of the young men and women in our state to serve. These sorts of incentives really go a long way to help them make that decision. And the services provided under this program there's a tuition reimbursement program that pays for performance. They don't get any funding unless they successfully complete the course and attain at least a C-level grade. That reimbursement's capped at the University of Minnesota's undergraduate rate, so if they go to a more expensive institution, they won't get any more than they would if they had gone to the University of Minnesota. And if they go to an institution that costs less, they get the lesser of the two amounts. Then that program was changed the last session to include members of the National Guard who have recently separated who did serve on active duty. So now we have an extended tuition reimbursement program, too, that's being used by our former members. They get 2 years plus time served to utilize that program, and thanks for their service and as they're members of the state Minnesota National Guard. The other new program in there is the state reenlistment bonus program. And the intent is to keep those mid-career soldiers actively drilling with the National Guard and actively engaged in that program. I think the governor discovered, as he was talking to some of the deployed service members, that not all people were able to or were interested in using the tuition reimbursement program, but really were looking for something that they could that would serve their needs better. And through the generosity of the legislature and the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota, we were able to introduce that program too, and they've been very successful in helping us maintain our membership in the Guard. And then finally, the last piece of our budget is the Emergency Services Appropriation, which is really an open appropriation. And as you can see, we've been very busy over the last decade responding to state natural disasters, and that funding comes through an open appropriation from the governor's legislature. And the money that shows up in that activity is an estimate based on a rolling average of the last several years of use of that program. So, Senator Vickerman, unless you have any questions, that concludes my briefing.
Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to start out by thanking all the service men and women, and would point out the fact that Senator Erickson Ropes has served in the service, too, and I want to thank you all for your service. Just a question, a comment first, and then a question, and I think I know the answer to this, but my comment is what struck me in hearing this budget is how very, very important the National Guard is in all of our lives. And what I'm getting at is you touched on the Republican National Convention that's going to be here. You touched on the bird flu. Now, a lot of people probably, you know, and I don't know if I really believe the bird flu is going to happen, but it may. And we've had, in the committees that I'm on, we've talked about it a lot. And even giving you a hypothetical, they say that it could be 10% of the population. Let's just say, hypothetically, it was 1% in Minnesota. We have 38,000 deaths in Minnesota just by natural and accidents. If there was just 1% more over and above what we have now, that'd be 50,000 deaths. There is no way that the 800 funeral directors in this state could handle that. And so the National Guard would there again be coming to the rescue of all the Minnesotans. And so I just think that I just wanted to point that out, that there again we'd be calling on the National Guard to help in this dire circumstance, God forbid if that ever happened. My question to Major General Shelato is, you were talking before when you gave your comments about how you're going to not only try to help the National Guardsmen that came back, but the reserve people. And my question is and this, the chairman alluded to this before about the young man who committed suicide who was a Marine. Would you be also reaching out to the Marines and all branches of service of whoever's coming back and providing them with whatever services that they would need?
Senator Vickerman, Senator Coring, thank you for that that question, that sobering question. First of all, which you may or may not aware of the committee, but there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that you're not aware of, that, but I would be interested in entertaining and showing you how our operations center works. I get briefed on the avian flu internationally every week, where it's propping up and so forth, and it's slow here, slow there. But it's a new country here, a new country there. So when it comes or if it does come, I don't know. We have over 5,000 bags located at Camp Ripley as we speak, should we have a major emergency. Talk about these deaths and so forth. You know, these are the things you don't want to hear, you don't want to know about, but these are the things that we do. On the suicide and so forth, give you an example. We had one of the constituents who had went through our training, whose son was sitting in his room. The door was closed, the lights were off, and hadn't come out for 2 days. She thought something was up. She went and she picked up a piece of paper because she sat through the ceremony the sessions, and she knew a phone number to call. That number was to the local training center. That person was at that conference, knew who was there, who was involved. They called the local social service. Within less than a few hours, we had a professional trained person there working with that person. We have had these sessions where someone has said, I just feel like killing myself, and we've had them in the VA hospital immediately. So there's a lot of issues with that VA thing that isn't going to be resolved very easily. And again, what we're doing as best as we can is trying to open the channels of communications. It'll be a father or a father-in-law who says, my son-in-law is back from overseas and he's just having a hard time. They're having a hard time. Is there someone you can have talk to him? My lead guy, Chaplain Morris, I've cloned him as many times as we possibly can. Minnesota is one of the few states that has a full, complete complement of chaplains. The harder I work them, the more chaplains I get. It's amazing. It's kind of the reverse effect, if you will. They have been extremely busy. We have been looking them in the eye. I was talking to a chaplain yesterday. He and another chaplain periodically will just check each other out. They become their own little support group because one of the chaplains will say, I'm redlining. I'm ready to burn out. Okay, here's what we'll do. We'll pick it up for you. And they just cross level because not only is it a lot of work, but sitting with a grieving family is so emotionally draining. We have a lot of casualty assistance officers that we actually have to watch. They are a casualty at home because they become emotionally involved with the family. And they eat, sleep, and drink with that family for the four, five, six, well, actually a week plus before the funeral actually takes place. So these are things, there's just a myriad of things that happen. And our goal is, if I could have, I was joking about it this morning, but I'm serious also. If I could have a sign on top of, for the men who have been to some sports bars, they have advertising above the, you know what? That's where I want it to be posted. I want everyone to know a hotline number of so forth because there's going to be more and more that are coming back. And then the other thing that I'm more concerned about is I want to, and this is where that incentive comes in. Why would you want to give a guy an incentive to stay in, especially the older one? You've already got them hooked. No, they are at the point of career change. They're at that point to say, am I going to stay in? Because this is really inflicting my job. The employer is going to say enough's enough. So do I stay or don't I stay? I really want to stay, but the pressure from the family, the pressure from the job, it's not worth it. Okay? And they get over the hump, and then they come back and kind of get back in. So I'm just saying I want the ability for everyone to know, And that's why I spoke to that. Why would I want to speak to Farm Mutual Insurance agents? Because they are in 500-plus communities all across the state of Minnesota, and they now know that something exists, and they know who to talk with. You're going to hear from the Veterans Administration and talking about energizing the veteran support officers. And with them in Alexandria, we had a reintegration ceremony. We had people from Washington, D.C. We had people from Michigan. We had people from Minsk, county veteran service officers, local agencies. We had the Lutheran Social Service do a training. One of the sessions we had, and this is interesting, we're learning as we go. This is building a plane on the fly. As we're flying, after the first after-action deal, they said, yeah, you've provided daycare for our family. We appreciate that. It's wonderful. Thank you, Minnesota, so that we can listen and hear about this stuff. But couldn't you do a little more in the daycare? Because those kids are hurting, too. Well, now we were able to, thanks to our foundation and so forth, which the license plate is an integral part of, able to contract with Lutheran Social Service. With Lutheran Social Service, we have professional trainers come in, and it's no longer a babysitting activity, it's a learning. The example that was cited was, all right, young kids, here's a scenario. Your mom's been promising you to go to Disney World. You've been looking forward to it, and then all of a sudden one day she comes in and says, we can't go. How would you feel? Oh, I'd feel very bad. Then they ask the critical question. Have any of you experienced something like that recently? Every hand goes up. Now, to get between 6 and 12-year-old kids to start talking about their emotions is absolutely significant and priceless. And that's the differences that we're trying to make so that they can make these things happen. When they come back home, I visit with all the veterans organizations, and I tell everybody, and people get upset with me, but you're going to ask them what it was like over there, be prepared to shut up and listen. Because they'll get sick and tired of people not wanting. So keeping them together, because if they don't stay in the guard, they're going to be out there home alone. And if they're out there by themselves, then we need the general public to be trained and aware on how to take care of them. When I talked to that farmers group, and I started talking about the things that we're wanting to do, there was a number of veterans that came up, and there's teary eyes in the audience talking about, I wish this had been done for me. I wish this has been. That's, in fact, I even get, I'm a Vietnam-era vet. And when we talk about this, that group gets pretty mad, angry. Because they still, it's just reminding them that they get left out. When I was talking to the Blue Star Mothers, there was a former vet there. And the more I talked, the madder he seemed to get. But what I was doing was reopening some wounds that were buried for a long period of time. That's a long answer, but I just want you to ask it because what we're trying to do, and by the way, Minnesota is being viewed as a national leader. Yep. As at the end of this meeting, I'm expected to get a call from the Chief of Staff of the Army at the Pentagon as they're just going nuts. They've been here, they're liking what they're seeing, and yet there's people up there saying, no, you're just going to wash cars or clean the weapons, and we don't want to do that. And we have people in Washington, D.C., as we speak, trying to change the entire U.S. policy. Current policy is leave them alone for 90 days. Why? Because you ask a troop, what do you want? I want to be left alone. Just leave me alone. And everyone can relate to that. But after the hugs and the kisses and mom's best meal, they go back to work, kids and relatives go back to school, and they're home alone. And that's when stuff like what happened with the VA happens.
Yep.
So thank you.
Thank you.
No,
just want to thank you again. I know, being that I represent Camp Ripley, I know the pride and the work that and the dedication and what they do, and so I just again thank you. I can't thank you enough. I know you probably get sick of hearing thank you, but and I will tell you that I have made it a practice, and you've said this, General, before. If you see somebody with a uniform on, just go up and shake their hand. And I have made that my practice to do that. I don't care if they're in a restaurant or where they're at. And some are just dumbfounded by it when just somebody just comes up and thanks them. But I got to tell you, that means a hell of a lot to them. You know, and I can never understand what these soldiers, but when you go over there and you're killing people and you come, you know, you have to, you're doing your job and you come back here, your life has changed forever. You know, and so we'll never understand, and all we can be is try to be a support mechanism for you guys. So I just, thanks again and appreciate it.
Any other questions? Major General Sholto, I want this committee to work closely together to make this a veteran-friendly state like we did last year and going to do better this year. I looked at big government's package. It disturbed me to a point because it's an awful lot of package, and I don't get a lot of details out of that. So what we're going to have to do in Minnesota is we don't have a lot of money, but we're going to step up to the plate and we're going to help as much as we possibly can because, you know, government moves slow. We might even be out of session here before they ever get that package put together. And then we can't wait, so we have to figure out some way to work together to move ahead. And I'll say this committee is the most friendly veteran committee I think that I've served on. And I mean that. We just need that. And I carried the supporter license plate and gave a speech the other day in the hall, and I was going to tell him I didn't want to upset him. I was going to say, you know, I think I'll go out and I'll walk around and I'll see how many cars you guys drove up here that if you got a supporter of troops license plate. I have two of them, but I'm not so sure a lot of them have them on there. So that's just something that we need to push that plate, and because it does raise money. We'll do the best we can. Any other questions? If not, we'll move right on to the next section, and that
Thank
will
you.
Be Department of Veterans Affairs. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Clark Dyrud, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. My right is Christine Keel, our Legislative Director. To left is Sherry Kromschroder, Finance Department. Today I want to present our base budget and the initiatives. So I'm going to reverse the order that General Sholto did. Reason is to just present kind of a framework of our department, and to do that, we have prepared this document, which you should have copies of. It says Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs 2008-2009 proposed budget, and what this is a, we hope, coherent overview of the budget pages so that you can very quickly figure out what our mission is. I would like to state that we do have a problem with Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs being confused with the VA, the federal VA. So I think it's important, and we do have new members this year, and I think it's important to just have a framework of what our little department is, how we fit in. And although we're little in size, we have a major impact on the veterans of this state. General Sholto has just talked to you about the National Guard. A statement that he didn't say today but has said in the past is that those people that are over there now, they'll be in the Guard for 1 to 6 more years, but they will be veterans forever. And that is a very important thing to remember. As we proceed, there are two themes that we'll be talking about that talk about our agency as well as our initiatives. Number one, way less than 50% of veterans know their benefits or apply for them. That is a fact, and that is an underlying theme of our department, of our base budget as we go forward. And so another theme that we will be stressing a lot is outreach, getting out, getting the word out to people in need. I would like to start by with this document, the very first page, and I'm certainly not going to read it, so I just want to make you rest easy on that, but I do want to sort of be tracking along in it. The first page gives our mission, and I would like to read that. It's very short and it's to the point. Our mission is to serve the veterans of Minnesota, their dependents and survivors, and to secure all benefits and services afforded to them under state and federal law. And that is a very succinct statement of what we do. I would like to drop to the bottom of that page and point out that last year, in fiscal year 06, our budget was $4.7 million, and in fiscal year 07, it went to $7.4 million. And I want to personally thank Senator Vickerman as chair and this committee for the wonderful work you did last year. We had a 40% increase in services to veterans, and we are back to finish the job this year. And again, I just want to thank you so much. Our department is broken into three general areas: benefits, services, and departmental operations. And if you move to page 3, there it outlines the benefits section. And these will also follow along in the budget books if you want to look at the big one. But our benefits section, the core services are listed right there. We have the State Soldiers Assistance Program, County Veterans Service Officer Grants, War Orphans Education Benefits, and a Veterans Preference Act. And I'm just going to touch on these. The State Soldiers Assistance Program, or the SSAP, is a real bread-and-butter part of our agency. It's a unique program. It was created in 1943. It gives money directly to veterans and their wives and husbands and children. It helps with things for the economically, for the needy veterans. And this is a program that had flatlined for many years. From 1980 until last year, it was the same amount. The guidelines had never changed. And I do want to say again that we never did come forward. I'm not trying to accuse the Senate or the House of anything. We as a department never came forward. So I want to make that very clear. And we are coming forward now, and we want to let you know what is necessary. Last year we got a wonderful increase, and we were able to up the guidelines, and we also created what we called a special needs program that to match what the Guard has for their people on active duty. A one-time something of a financial crisis that comes up, the Guard is able to do that through their family assistance funds. We had nothing similar for veterans. Now we do. And I'm just want to again thank you, and I want to point out that we were somewhat nervous because this is administered by county veteran service officers. So we got a big increase last year, but number one, we had to gear up internally. We had to hire a couple more staff members. We had to get the guidelines in place. Then we had to train the county service officers. So until about September or October, there was really not much usage. But I'm happy to report that it is taking off more and more every year, and it looks like it's going to be used this year. We were wondering if we needed a carryover since it was halfway through the fiscal year and it was new. But it is, I think, really being used wonderfully by the County Veteran Service Officers. I'm happy to report. Then we had a brand new program last year, County Veteran Service Officer Grant. Now, the county service offices are funded at 100% by county dollars. They answer to each county board. So we had a proposal because of all of the activity here in the state of Minnesota. We had a proposal for grants that could be applied for to enhance their services. It built into the language, as you recall, Senator, was wording so that a county board could not reduce their operating costs by the amount of the grant. And the amount we asked for was cut last year, and we ended up with $200,000 for all 87 counties.
I'm happy to say that we have received applications from 34 different counties. They asked for grants in excess of $600,000. And this is, again, with very short notice, very, a brand new program. And so there is a pent-up need and desire by the county service officers for this program. We do certify county veteran service officers that they get ongoing training. And we do have something that will show up in the budget pages. There is a $177,000 grant for county veteran service officers that has been in existence for a while. That's for computer equipment, things of that nature. Every county is eligible for it every third year, providing they're certified. So that it might get confusing. It looks like there's two grants in there, and there are. And that's the reason for it. One is very small. We also have a War Orphans Education Benefit. It's a very small program. It's for the children of veterans who have died as a result of service. Last year, only 70 people qualified. And we give a $750 one-time grant each year. And the MNSCU the University of Minnesota give a waiver of tuition for those people. It's a very small program. Non-financial programs, we have a Veterans Preference Act, which we administer. It deals only with hiring and firing within public employers, like schools, counties, cities, things of that nature. Then we want to move on to page 5. We get to the core services or services within our services division, and that is claims, outreach, veteran service organizations, and the support our troops license plate. Claims and outreach are kind of the core of getting federal benefits to veterans. I'm so proud of our claims and outreach. Because of their work, $14 million a month goes into the pockets of veterans around the state. We have over $1 billion worth of federal benefits coming into the state. And about $600 million of that is direct compensation and pension to the veterans. And this is the one that veterans do not know about. And the VA itself says that they used to say 30%. It's a little higher now. Of veterans actually apply for those benefits. Our claims and benefit, our claims division has been around since 1943. We act as advocates for veterans trying to get their benefits. And outreach is something that started just 2 years ago. We know that there is a very low usage of benefits, but we know that is exacerbated in minority populations, in women veterans, and in the homeless. And so we've started a program that goes out actually one-on-one and tracks veterans down and helps them apply and follows through. And there's been a dramatic increase in services as a result of that. It's a very important part of our operation now. The veteran service organizations, there's four of them that have historically been getting a small amount from the legislature every year. They provide claim services. Also, the same type of thing we do, but bear in mind, attorneys are not allowed to work in that area based on a law passed after the Civil War. So there are no other options for veterans for help other than our department and some of these other service organizations. And I just want to point out, and I think you got testimony on this last week, but if those claims offices were to go away, we would have to more than double our staff for that type of service. So it is a very good return on investment, the small amount that we give to the service organizations. Then the support our troops license plates. Senator, you mentioned earlier, they are not selling as well as were projected. The projections coming from DPS projected that it would sell at the same rate that the loon plate did for critical habitat. But they're not. They're not selling that well. They're picking up gradually, but started with over the goals were too high.
Mr. Dyrud, just on that subject, I picked up one of my papers, and I see that the Environmental Hunting and Fishing want to have a new license plate. I went to the governor's office, and I said, we don't need another license plate. We've got one. Tell them to use this one. And we get sold? We don't need, we got the loon, we got the deer, and now they want some fish or something else. How many of those license plates can you sell to people? I said, what we ought to do, I know you can't stop it, but what we ought to do is say, use the plate we've got.
Thank you for your comment, Senator.
Thank you.
Moving on to page 7, we have the core functions in our departmental operations. They are the State Cemetery up on the corner of Ripley. It is an absolute jewel. It's open in the mid-90s. Memorial Day now, we always have ceremony on the Sunday before Memorial Day. Last year, there's over 2,000 people that come. But it is just a wonderful operation.
Senator Coring?
I'd like to comment right at this point, if I can, because it has to do with the cemetery. The cemetery is in my district, as Camp Ripley is again. I want to just comment again and say the tremendous pride that veterans have knowing that this cemetery is theirs. It's hard to explain. And Clark, or Commissioner, you know this. You see when you come up there, I mean, there's thousands and, you know, there's a couple thousand people sitting there braving the heat and or braving the rain or whatever it is. And so I just want to thank you. And I guess I have a question on this. You know, being that I have a funeral car service, actually I'm at the cemetery quite often with veterans. And I know that David is doing a great job up there. And I'm wondering if he has enough help to make sure that we're maintaining that in the proper way. Is that Are you? Do you have enough help for that, or do you need more, or where are we at with that?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Corn, thank you for your comments. We feel comfortable. We have been increasing staffing as we have gone along. And there'll be something I'll be mentioning when we get to the initiative section in there. But I think we are quite comfortable. We started with David, as you mentioned.
Yes.
Basically one-person operation, yep. And we have been growing steadily.
That's
since
really
then.
Great. Yes. Thank you.
Also, on back to page 7 on there, also in addition to the cemetery, we also received funding last year for a one-stop web shop. I mean, it's the web, the Internet is the world we live in, and there are so many websites out there for veterans. And so what we are looking at is pulling them together, making it very easy for veterans to start in one place here in Minnesota and go in many different directions. And I believe most of you have a pen on the table, and that is our pen that lists that website. And I would ask if you would look at that at some point. We're very proud of that. Again, it starts in major groupings, and you can burrow down. You can find your way back. And you can go in many directions, including right to various sources and fill out applications. And so please look at that and comment. And there, if you want to see things added or changed, please let us know. But that came up online, I think, first part of December. So it's quite new, and we're quite proud and are looking for input. We also... the next one, the Higher Education Veterans Assistance Offices on Campuses. That's a mouthful. What we refer to that is as campus reps. That is a new program that started last year. And we're sitting up here, and some legislators question, number one, if we could get it up in time to help, or number two, maybe we should wait until after this large influx of people came back. And thanks again to this committee. We created the campus rep program last year. They were in place by time school started. We speeded things up by hiring a gentleman from MinSCU, Don Pfeffer. We contracted for services rather than reinvented the wheel, and he's here today somewhere in the back. Don Pfeffer is here. And we then hired 6 campus reps that are stationed around the state. And we Our first report is due January 15th every year. Our first report to the legislature is out. In that short time, they had 1,700 individual contacts at these campuses around the state. And it is an amazing success. I mean, the information we testified to last session is still in effect. A new veteran, in other words, a soldier coming back, usually will drop out at the rate of 30% in the first semester or quarter. And this has people on the campuses that can talk eyeball to eyeball and help them not only with their veterans' education issues, but with the bigger issues that might be facing them with other benefits or in just in their life. So it is, we are so happy.
Senator Hand, do you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes, and just Commissioner, to this point, and I don't remember when we had this discussion last session, and one of the questions I had then, and I guess I'd like to know a little bit how this is working today, how the outreach is to the private college campuses. And I know that when we talked about this, there was a pretty close working relationship with public universities and colleges, but I know when I came back from Vietnam and I went back to college down at St. Peter, and I was the only veteran around and didn't know anybody at Mankato, you know, I thought about that, and I thought, is this program going to be able to provide some kind of outreach to these private college campuses? They tend to be smaller. We've got a number of them around the state, but how does that work?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Hand, that was built in from day one. So although we got funding for only six of them, they are spaced geographically around the state, and as they have proceeded, they've done outreach within their districts to public and private colleges and universities, tech schools, everything. So they have been introducing themselves, letting themselves be known, and open to calls from veterans or from staff or whatever. So that we were very aware of and want to work in and have worked in. So, yes, thank you.
Senator Lurie.
That was pretty much my question. I did see that you were requesting that the private schools provide adequate office space for these. Have the private schools been cooperative and embracing your efforts as well? Thank you.
Chair Vickerman, Senator Lowry, to date, we only have six, remember. And so they are staffed adequately. As they go, they've set up satellite offices in some of the facilities, and there, to date, has been no problem. And so I would say there really is not a problem, because in a private, to date, they're not set up permanently in a private college.
But
we have. And I'm just getting a message. Apparently, four private colleges have actually set aside space or offices for use. So, and this is kind of the reception we've been getting from all around the state. The MNSCU has been wonderful. The university has been wonderful, and the private institutions and tech colleges have been great.
Thank you. That's what I would expect, and I'm glad to hear that it's happening. Thank you.
Page 8 is the administrative services, which, of course, includes almost everything that we haven't talked about to date. We do get some donations. Then we move into the non-financial programs within department operations. There's something called an RSVP program. We do send out a letter to every returning veteran in the state. However, and this is a very big however, when a person who is on active duty or to a lesser degree, a reserve unit comes back to the state, they get that. It's called a DD-214, their separation paper. They have to check a block that says that the state Veteran Service office will get a copy. If they don't check that box, we don't get a copy. And if they check the box, if we get a copy, we have a whole packet we send out to them. We refer them to county veteran service officers who also follow up. But the big issue is, again, outreach. There are scores of soldiers, sailors, et cetera, slipping back into this state that we don't know about. So that, again, then now we're back to outreach. How do we get the word out? So we also have a state approving agency, which is completely federally funded. We have four staff people. The VA makes sure that schools that they give their federal VA GI Bill to is that they are accredited schools. So this is the people work through our agency, but they're completely funded by federal dollars. Now, moving page 9, moving along smartly, we come to the initiative. So we've kind of laid a framework of what we do and what we want to do with outreach, with our change requests. Number one is we've called it outreach and communication. And again, how do you get the word out? We have in that area, we have split into three areas. We have a request for $1.5 million for tribal veteran service offices. We started getting requests from Red Lake, Fond du Lac, Leech Lake, primarily from Vietnam veterans, combat veterans, who started contacting us. We started contacting because we wanted to do outreach. To make a long story short, we are requesting funding for tribal service officers, primarily in the northern tribes, Prairie Island and Shakopee support it, but are not requesting funding for their tribes. But we are requesting tribal service. There's such a high rate of service in the Native American community. A figure that gets used is somewhere around 30% of adult males on reservations volunteer for service. And during a time of war, they historically volunteer for combat. They don't volunteer to just serve. There obviously is a warrior tradition in the Native American community of which they are very proud. And this is such a need, and it's something that we are well aware of, having helped veterans with claims. We know that there is a need. And I think I need to point out, just as a point of honor, present today is one of the Vietnam veterans that has been working on that, but he also is one of the seven hereditary chiefs that from Red Lake. They have seven clans on Red Lake, and he's a hereditary chief of the Bear Clan, but he's been working on this. Jim Loud, would you at least wave, or you're back there somewhere. So I just as a point of honor want to point out one of their hereditary chiefs. So we are looking for $1.5 million in that area. We also have, present. Well, she was here, but Anna Marie Hill Kleinhaus from the Indian Affairs Council, and that is a collection of all 11 tribal chairs, and she's executive director, so she is following this also. We are also asking for $2 million for the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, or MACV. They have been around for quite a number of years, and they provide service to homeless veterans from the streets to full employment and residency. They will work with someone who is literally on the streets, but they are well known throughout the state and work with other agencies. They are not duplicative. In other words, they know what's out there, and they work very well moving the homeless veteran into whatever services, whether it's medical attention or chemical dependency, whatever. They work. Then pick the veteran up at some point, help them get more stable housing, help them find employment, and they have a record of accountability, bar none. Their quarterly reports are about this thick. It's quite amazing. They, to date, have been almost completely dependent on profit. They're nonprofit. In other words, fundraising is the word I'm looking for. They're dependent on fundraising. So last year they turned away 700 eligible veterans, homeless veterans, at different times depending on how much fundraising they've done. So they have a staff in place. It is not. It doesn't change. It's not The staff is very stable. Their services are very stable. The number of people they can help goes up and down depending on their funding. We are asking for $2 million for operational funding. They have been part of initiatives to get bonding funds in the past, but this is actual operations, and this is very goes right to the core of homelessness. There are already homeless veterans from the Iraq era, which is just a shame. It's so sad to be able to have to say that.
Well, Mr. Dyrwood, my concern is, as I said earlier, when we bring all those veterans back here, this war will end sometime. Then we're really going to have people here and there.
Absolutely.
No veteran should be homeless. I think.
Right.
I watched a bunch of them, not veterans, but people.
Yes.
In this last cold spell, huddled up on blankets in some of the buildings.
Exactly.
We can't allow that. That's got to stop.
Absolutely. Thank you. We are also asking for... We do have their executive director, Kathy Vitales, is in the audience. So just if you would wave, you'll probably talk to her later. Also, we have in there $500,000 for marketing from 1-800 line to go along with our website, so to speak, and the general issue of marketing, getting the word out to veterans. One legislator I was talking to pointed out that in her district, the newspaper puts her number on how to contact their representative on a regular basis. Why don't they put that for a helpline for veterans or how to get the word out to veterans? That's just a small example of what we're talking about. There's getting the word out to the veterans and the new veterans is so critical. We also then are, the second item, we are asking for an increase in the County Veteran Service Officer grants. We're asking for $2.8 million. We're also asking for one-time $500,000. So they have shown already that there is a need, as I said, that they, with very short notice, where there's a pent-up demand and energy, and these funds, they have to show what they're using it for. It's not just a carte blanche. We do set it up as a grant system. They have to report back how they use it, and so it's not just... it's not just giving money to a county. They have to show that this is going for outreach, that this is going for service. For example, one thing that many counties will look for is transportation, getting a veteran physically to a VA or a place of help, some of the rural counties. Anyway, this is I'm so pleased with the interest and the intensity with which they have. Going in this
Dyrwood,
for these
that's one thing that I've been kind of keying in on, but if we're going to give them that amount of money, I want some accountability. I don't want the counties just to pass it off.
Right.
We got to have some accountability, because I will tell you what, if a veteran come up and ask me where he could get this and this program, I would have to call my county veteran service office. I'd like that veteran to be able to go to that service officer, bypass me, go right there and see what I need. And I think that's what we have to do. I know some county officers are good, and some of them maybe just need a little more training or something. So not to pick on them, but there's a little work to be done there.
Chair Vickerman, I think you have stated it very well, and I think for... especially some of the new senators, that is very well put. Some service officers do just an outstanding job, and some don't do as outstanding a job. And the bottom line is they answer to each of their boards. There are 87 bosses of the County Veteran Service Offices. One of the intents of the service officer grant is kind of a carrot rather than a stick. If they come up with good ideas for outreach and service, they will be rewarded. And I think a tacit part of this is we will be publicizing lists and letting county boards know who is getting the money and what it is, what they are getting it for. And there are going to be some counties out there who are going to, some commissioners who are going to be asking their neighbors, why did you, how did you get that? How come we didn't? That's sort of a tacit side of this. but you absolutely hit the nail on the head. But we have accountability built in. They have to put down the reasons, what they want the grant for. They have to report midterm, in other words, over a year period, and they have to report at the end. And so we have that, those controls built in. So it is absolutely, I want to emphasize, it is not a pass, it's not just a sort of a pass-through, here, you know, here, county, take this. And they have to ask for it and account for it. We also are asking for an increase in the higher ed, the campus rep program. We want to increase them to several other locations. We'd like to put them like in Bemidji, Detroit Lakes, Hibbing, Virginia, Brainerd, Alexandra, Winona, Rochester, Worthington, and various colleges around the metro area. We want to do that. So we are asking for, again, $1.8 million with a $500,000 one-time amount, which would, of course, cover this, the big influx of people coming home. The State Soldiers Assistance Program, we're asking for $2 million more there. As I said, that one is very gratifying. The speed with which the county service officers have been getting word out on this, and we are, this is such an important part. This helps our Minnesota veterans in very real ways, and the veterans' spouses and children as well, which is very unusual. Again, a principle, the VA itself, the federal VA, really does nothing for spouses and children, only for veterans, and that's a very important point to remember. This program actually helps spouses and children. We are also asking for an increase in the Veterans Service Organization funding. And in there, we are also asking to open it up slightly. We want it to service organizations who have existing programs serving veterans. Now, and we're very specific about that. We don't, you know, we're not looking for fundraising or things of that nature. We are looking for existing service organizations, congressionally chartered, who have existing programs that are helping veterans. We want to help them, help veterans. We view them as an extension of ourselves. And we are very adamant. We do not want to start startup funds. We don't want, you know, service organizations to say, oh, I'm going to start a new program. We are very, want to be, make very clear that this is for existing organizations who already have programs in place. But this would increase the base funding. Right now, the increase that was given last year was funded primarily out of the support of our troops, although we did get, again, thanks to you, we did get a, you, generally, all of you, we did get a one-time $80,000 amount to cover the increase, the deficit. But we are asking for...
Senator, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Commissioner, there are some great ideas on this page, and I'm very happy to see that you have a plan for programs for dealing with the homeless. And I'm also very pleased about the Native American outreach that you have described to this committee. We've had the Native American Armed Services troop or their unit in Winona several times to participate in community events. I'm reminded here, looking at the revenue from the supporter troops license plates, it's my understanding that some of that money was to be directed towards outreach to underserved veterans groups like the Native American groups and like the homeless. And I'm wondering if there are any plans to outreach to women veterans. I think we're seeing increased service from the women of our state and nation. And can you address that, please?
Chair Bickman, Senator Erickson-Ropes, and again, thank you for your service. I did gloss over that perhaps too quickly. We opened an outreach branch of claims, a trial run about 2 years ago, and we got funding, initial funding for it last year. Initially, we were working in the metro area, but the stated purpose of that is outreach to minority veterans, and we work primarily with African-American communities in the metro area, homeless veterans, and women veterans. That is one of the purposes. And we have been working very closely with the VA. They have an area within the VA that is trying to outreach to women veterans. And that is such a sad story. Do you realize, Senator, up until the Vietnam era, when we would speak in public, we had to be sure that we would ask if there were any women that served in the military. We could not ask, are there any women veterans, because the women from World War II and Korea did not consider themselves veterans. They would not raise their hands. So we learned many years ago that you had to ask, are there any women here who have served in the military? It's very sad. But the VA changed many of the ways that they operated. We have been working with, for example, women who have experienced sexual trauma within the military. It used to be impossible to get claims through for them. The VA fortunately changed the way they operate. They don't need evidence like in a trial. They will take the word of the veteran. And there is such a community of women veterans who have not come forward and identified themselves as veterans, and that is very much what we want to do in our outreach. So I glossed over it.
Follow-up question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, is that outreach only based in the metro area now, or are there any plans?
Oh, no. We have a branch office up in Fargo, which covers northwestern Minnesota, but the outreach we've hired three women staff to work primarily with women veterans. One is in Fargo to cover that area, and the rest in the metro area. But what we do with outreach is start working well with county veteran service officers, with service organizations, but with VA, we are working directly to try to get the word out. Now we're back to again marketing and outreach from the aspect of women veterans. That is exactly what we want to do. We are working with the VA to do something like the summit, which we did last fall, for the reintegrating or returning veterans. We want to do the same thing for women veterans, but we want to do that around the state. That's what we want to do.
Thank you. And one more question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I do have a great concern for the returning women who served. I know there's one family in my district in particular. Mother's been over in Iraq now. She's finishing up her 18 months, and she'll be coming back. But she left behind six children and a husband. And, you know, they're doing quite well. But it seems to me that women are going to have a whole different set of challenges coming back, whether they're mothers or daughters or sisters. And I'm just wondering, to what extent are you prepared to deal with that and ready to reach out?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Erickson-Ropes, one other piece of information. This returning group of veterans, about 3,000, and we don't know the exact percentage, but somewhere about 15%. And I won't look at them because I don't want to see if they're nodding or disagreeing. The number has never been determined exactly, but somewhere in that neighborhood of the returning veterans are women. And what is really amazing and unlike any other war era is that a large percentage of those women will have seen combat or been very definitely in harm's way. And therefore, post-traumatic stress disorder, the potential for that is an equal opportunity employ. I mean, there will be issues. We are well aware. The Guard, we've had such close communication over the last 2 years, and I really want to thank General Shelto and his staff. I mean, we've been working together to try to look at issues exactly like that. And again, getting the word out is going to be so important.
Thank you.
Continue.
Now we get to the state cemetery, and like pointed out to Senator Kern, we are looking for a rather small amount, $150,000, for funding for the cemetery employees, which were covered under our admin services in our downtown office. So it's a rather small amount, but to deal with some of the staff in Fort Snelling. We are also asking for IT increase. We've worked with the OET, Office of Enterprise Technology. This funding, $200,000, is primarily for software, security, virus, antivirus, all that type of thing. As I think I don't know if I reported I know to some of you privately, but last summer our website was taken over. The splash page, the first page you go to, was taken over for several hours one day. When you type Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, you got a picture of Osama bin Laden. it was just outrageous. But they weren't able to crack into our, within. It was just that splash page, it's called. So, I mean, you have hackers everywhere, and this kind of helps in that area. We are moving men to admin resources. This will show up in Department of Finance requests. We're asking for $1 million. Our agency has grown in size dramatically in the last year, and the fact I like to say is a year ago last August, the so-called front office consisted of our deputy, Mike Puglisi, sitting behind me, and myself. I mean, as we were changing our operation moving forward, so we have come from a very small agency. We are expanding, and we do need help in that area, and that will show up. That shows up there under that title, admin's resources. And then there's the compensation adjustment, which I believe is across the state. That in our department, that amounts to $191,000. The other change then on the last page, War Orphans Act, what we are looking for there is just to add the spouses into that category. Right now, it is only the children, but we want to include the spouses of veterans who are deceased as a result of their service. So it's a very small, a very small amount not people, but very important. And we want to thank Senator Kubley is carrying that part. Then the last two items will be spoken of at length in the future. We have the Minnesota GI Bill, which I believe you are hearing next Tuesday. So we will not talk about that today. And then the exemption from state income tax for military pay and pensions that Colonel Allness and the General spoke to earlier. But that that concludes our presentation today, and certainly open for any questions.
Mr. Dyrwood, I have a question. I used to be a county commissioner and worked closely with him. Do you ever get a chance to speak to the Minnesota Association of Counties in their meetings to tell them that their officers should shape up? You've got to talk tough if you're going to get county commissioners to listen. Something that you maybe should do,
yes,
if you could get a chance to.
Yes. Chairman Vickerman, you ask the direct questions. yes, we do have a booth at the AMC conventions. So whereas we haven't spoken to the whole body, I think it's fair to say that we do try to speak one-on-one to as many county commissioners as we can.
Any other questions?
Continue to do.
Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got two or three quick questions here. Commissioner Dyrwood, you mentioned that when the soldier is leaving service, he has to check off a box if the state is going to be notified that he's leaving the service. And so if he doesn't check it off, you don't find out. Why would that be so important to have that box there? Why couldn't you be notified just as in the matter of just as a standard operating procedure?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Dill, that it would require federal legislation, and we are trying to actually work on that. But that is, you know, data privacy from Department of Defense. So they just, that's their standard data privacy practice. The soldier, the new veteran, in other words, has to check that box, and if they don't, data privacy prevents them. So we are hoping at some point to maybe change that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I would say that maybe at the time of departure, they may not think they want anybody to know about it. But maybe as you get down the line a month or two or three and things aren't going so hot, it might be nice to get a telephone call from you to see how you're making out. So just from the standpoint of public health and veteran welfare, it seems like that should be changed. Now, I missed the first part of the presentation today, but I just, out of curiosity, I think Minnesota's among how many states that still tax military pensions and pay and so forth?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Dill, it was 8 last year, and it has dropped to 7. So there are 7 states that still tax. And of interest here geographically is Wisconsin stopped taxing 3 years ago now, I believe. I don't know the exact month that they started, but let's say 3 years ago now that they stopped taxing. So we do have the main point, the main focus of that piece of legislation is to get the young soldiers who are about 40 years old to choose to settle here in Minnesota. Last year, some people started talking about the side of, you know, a tax break for the military retirees, but that the main focus is to get the young soldiers to settle here. They get second jobs, their spouses get jobs, they use goods and services in the state, they have the training and education to be useful almost immediately in companies around Minnesota. And as we know, there is going to be a shortage of employees in the future in Minnesota.
And Mr. Chairman, members, I just have one other question. It has to do with a proposed smoking ban. Do statewide veterans organizations, or do you or others representing veterans organizations have any position on what we should do?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Dill, we do have present today the commander of the American Legion, John Cox, and the adjutant, Lyle Foltz. And it's interesting you should mention that. That question came up at another committee, and I would like to call on Commander Cox to answer that.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
My name is John Cox. I'm the commander of the American Legion in the state of Minnesota. Chairman, Senator Dill, the American Legion will not take a stand on the smoking ban. The reason is it's not a veterans issue. And so our position is that right now we will not take a stand on that, whether good or bad.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Dill, when I was home last week, went to 3 of my veterans organizations. And I walked in and talked to one of them. He says, "You bet, put it on, but I don't smoke." And the next veteran was here, and he says, "Don't you dare vote for that." So that's that was the mixed emotion I got in all 3 of them. Nothing solid, nothing concrete, just depends on who you talk to. But they agreed with me, and I would get into that after a while. We're going to have to do a little compromise with the ban. I'd certainly like to do it if we could compromise just a little bit. So, because pull tabs go down very much.
Senator, now the pull tabs right now throughout the state are down over 35%.
And Chair Vickerman?
Yes.
Again, just to amplify, the American Legion as an organization doesn't take a position, but a local post certainly may. So, I mean, I think that's evident. I mean, that wasn't stated that directly, but that's what it amounts to. I mean, so it is, it could very much be an issue for a specific organization locally within their club. Again, at the state level and nationally, it's not a veterans issue.
You're right. Any other questions? Well, members, thanks, members, for sticking around. I know it gets late. We'll be looking at the whole budget picture one of these days when we kind of get some of the stuff together, so we'll all have a chance to go back through all this again. So thank you, members, and thank Legion people, and thank all you veterans, and we are adjourned.